The more I study Genesis, the happier I am they didn't put my family in the Bible. I wouldn't want anybody to know about our faults and idiosyncrasies, and believe me, we have a few. I don't know what Abraham and Sarah would have thought about having all their dirty laundry hung out for all the world to see, but it's there, and we're nosy, so we're going to look at it. At some point in our lives, we have made some decisions that got us into situations that we couldn't get ourselves out of. Ultimately, we could not save ourselves. If God didn't show up, we would be in a world of hurt. If you're not in that kind of situation right now, you will be eventually. It will come tomorrow, next week, or next year. I can't say when, but it's going to come. The good news is, many times God will come to our rescue, even though we are in a mess of our own making. That's exactly what we're going to see in today's episode of Abraham and Sarah Breaking Bad. When we make poor decisions, we not only get ourselves into a mess, but we tend to suck others up into it too. Abraham and Sarah make a real mess. They almost doom their future family, and they get complete strangers mixed up in their mess. We're going to read from Genesis chapter 20, beginning with verse 1. From there, Abraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and lived in Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned into Gerar. Abraham is moving the whole family again. Now, God did not tell him to move, so that's bad decision number one. He's also moving to a country whose people will eventually be called the Philistines. So that's bad decision number two. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. You're probably thinking to yourself right about now, haven't we heard this one before? We know you're a senior citizen, but come on. No. This is the second time Abraham has tried to play the she's my sister game. The first time it happened was in Genesis 12. Now we see Abraham trying to give his wife away again. If at first you don't succeed, try again, right? But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." It can never be said that God is subtle. He basically is telling King Abimelech, "You touch her, you're dead." Now Abimelech had not yet approached her. So he said, "Lord, will you kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister'? And she herself said, 'He is my brother.' In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this." Abimelech is saying, "God, you saw it. They're both convincing liars. How was I supposed to know?" Then God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her." Abimelech, he's trying to pass off the idea that he's a good guy. He didn't touch Sarah because he's got so many morals. But God tells him, you're not a good guy. You just didn't get the chance, and I'm the one who kept you from touching her. God knew that Abimelech had not touched Sarah. God knew Abimelech did not know he was being lied to. And that's why God showed up before Abimelech did something everybody would regret. "Now then, return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, so that he may pray for you and you shall live. But if you do not return her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." This last little bit must have made Abimelech's eyeballs roll a little bit, calling Abraham, the habitual liar, a prophet. The liar is going to pray for him? If it were me, I might have said, "That's okay." It's hard to see that Abraham and Sarah are godly right here. But in the Bible, the believers are not always the good people, and the unbelievers are not always the bad people. So Abimelech rose early in the morning and called his servants and told them all these things, and the men were very much afraid. So Abimelech sets his alarm clock because he does not want to sleep in. Not today. His neck is on the line. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you see that you did this thing?" Abraham said, "I did it because I thought, there is no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife." Honestly, Sarah is over 90 years old at this point. Goodness gracious, boys, give grandma a break. Let her retire. "Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, 'This is the kindness you must do me. At every place to which we come, say of me, he is my brother.'" Have you ever noticed when somebody is found guilty, they start to talk a lot? They start to justify what they've done? This is exactly what Abraham is doing. "I did it because I thought you guys were going to kill me to get to my wife. Besides, I didn't lie. She is my sister, even though she is my half-sister." Abraham and Sarah are on thin ice. Although I will hasten to repeat, it is a spot they put themselves in by moving, without God telling them to a place God would have never told them to go. It was not unheard of for an ancient king to kill a man for his wife. And once they're in this guy's country, he makes a play for Sarah. It would have been hard for them not to resort to lying. This couple is capable of bad ideas. It's interesting that both of their ideas revolve around adultery. We saw that Sarah asks Abraham to have a baby with her servant. And Abraham tells Sarah to join a pagan king's harem with hundreds of other women. The danger Abraham put Sarah in was incalculable. Sarah was a foreigner, and there were no laws to protect her. She's not even going to have any of the protections offered by marriage. She's just going to be a throwaway mistress. I shudder to think what would have happened to her if she had resisted the king. Now, I'm going to tell you something. If Jim did this to me, the king wouldn't have had to kill him. Unless God intervened, both of these lying liars would lose their marriage and the son that they've waited and waited and waited for. They would never become the mother and father of a great nation. God had to show up to save their hides. God has a way of saving his people. I can look back on several occasions and see how God creatively saved me from a bad situation. God will creatively save Abraham and Sarah now. He gets to the king when nobody could get to him. If you're a king back then, you got an army, you've got bodyguards, and nobody can get to you, theoretically, unless you're God. God doesn't just get into his bedroom, God gets right into his head via a dream. God is sovereign, meaning he's in charge. None of the three major characters in our story are in control. They think they are, but they're not. They are, in fact, out of control. When we realize God is in control, it emotionally changes the way we live. If you don't believe there's a God who's in control of human history, you're going to self-destruct with stress and anxiety. When we look up and we realize there is a God who is sovereign, who has the authority to intervene, it changes how you think, how you feel, and how you live your life. There have been seasons in my life when things look pretty dark, and there have been seasons in my life when I will admit some things became dangerous, and I couldn't see a future, but God was in control. If I didn't believe in the sovereignty of God, I don't think I would be an emotionally healthy human being. Who do you want to be in charge of your life? Most of us would not answer this out loud, but we would silently say, "Well, I want to be in charge. I want to be in control." A desire to be in control often stems from a fear of uncertainty. Additionally, past experiences like trauma or unstable childhoods, These can intensify a need for control, and control becomes a coping mechanism. People believe that controlling their environment or others can provide safety and predictability. What it usually does, however, is create hostility, and nobody can control that. Controlling behaviors can be very destructive. Controlling behaviors include calling the shots, disrespecting privacy and boundaries, constant checking in, picking unnecessary fights, total management of the money, isolating others, guilt tripping, gaslighting, doing things only so others become indebted to you, jealousy, narcissism, and conditional love. Controlling behaviors can strain and ruin relationships. Instead of giving a sense of calm and peace, attempts to control often leads to increased anxiety and feelings of being overwhelmed. Many times when we have an overabundance of anger and anxiety, it's because we're trying to control things we can't. To use a recent buzzword, controlling behaviors create dysregulation. Dysregulation is a term that psychologists use to say their client is emotionally out of control. You can see this when people get into a conflict with somebody. They scream, cry, swear, and falsely accuse others. This is a dysregulated person. Signs that you or someone else is dysregulated are acting impulsively, experiencing intense mood swings, having difficulty calming down when upset, and engaging in self-harm or substance abuse. These behaviors often stem from an inability to manage strong emotions effectively. The harder we try to control something, the more dysregulated we become. The Bible tells us what it is to be emotionally regulated. Galatians 5, 22 and 23. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things, there is no law. The way to be an emotionally regulated human being is to allow God to be in control and to let Him fill you with His Spirit. Most of us do become dysregulated from time to time, trying to gain control over our lives. We meticulously plan our careers, our finances, and our families. We create 5-year plans, retirement accounts, and manage detailed schedules. We think that if we just work hard enough, if we plan carefully enough, and manage everything tightly, we will be safe. We can guarantee our future happiness. Hey, if all this control worked, that would be one thing, but it often doesn't. Sometimes our carefully laid plans are disrupted by an unexpected illness. Sometimes our fastidious financial calculations are thrown off by market downturns or job losses. Most of the time, the ideas and goals we have for our children fall flat. Let me tell you, I had plans for each one of the boys, and none of them are doing what I wanted them to do. The same, no doubt, will be true of Vivi. Fine, I'm over it. Control is an illusion. Proverbs 16:9 reminds us, in their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord enables their steps. When we let go of control, we will discover something remarkable. It's called freedom. Freedom from anxiety, freedom from the burden of having to figure everything out, freedom from the constant stress of trying to manipulate outcomes. Jesus himself modeled the ultimate release of control in the Garden of Gethsemane. Facing what was perhaps the most difficult moment in his life, he prayed this, Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. He showed us that true strength lies not in controlling our circumstances, but in surrendering them to God's will. There are many reasons why we should surrender control to God. Among them are, He is truly in charge of this universe. His plans are perfect. His timing is impeccable. When we surrender control over to God, we experience the peace that passes all understanding. This peace is not dependent on our circumstances. It flows from the assurance that the Creator of the universe is orchestrating all things for our good and for His glory. Surrendering to God does not mean that we have to stop planning or working diligently, but it does mean that we hold our plans loosely, recognizing that God could redirect us at any moment for purposes that we can't yet understand. Letting go of control can take a little bit of practice. Each morning we can pray like the psalmist, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and He will establish your plans." Each evening we can release our worries to Him, trusting that He watches over us even while we sleep. The more we try to gain control of our lives, the more out of control they get. But the more we surrender to God's control, the more peace and direction we experience. When we let God be in control, we're not giving up. We're just changing course. We're not resigning to fate. We're resting in faith. We're not becoming passive. We're becoming powerful through our dependence on the One who holds all the power. We want God to be in control. We might not think we do, but we do. And the main reason we want God to be in control is because God is good. God was even good to the pagan king Abimelech. He doesn't zap him right off the bat. He lets him in on the lie and shows him how to get out of trouble. God is good to Sarah. He gets her out of Abimelech's clutches. God is even going to be good to Abraham and get him his wife back. God is good to everyone in this story. Matthew 5:45 says, "God causes His sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." This is the goodness of God. He is good to all, even to those who do not deserve it. I don't know what you're going through. I don't know what bad decisions you've made. However, if you feel like sharing, I'm all ears. Text me, 630-363-5901. I have made some real bad decisions in my life, some real doozies. And Abraham and Sarah's story rings true to me, and it might ring true to you too. We made a bad decision, and it catapulted us into a bad place, and it caused a lot of pain. But this does not have to be the end of our story. God can rescue us from our own messes, just like He did with Abraham and Sarah. Abraham and Sarah's God is our God too. He was good to them, and He will be good to us. He rescued them, and He can rescue us. My friends, surrender control to Him. He is our refuge and our strength. He is a faithful God forever.